So here we go. Now my promise to you is I will only split hairs when it is helpful to us. I don't make up extra categories to make things painful. Sometimes it's hard to imagine that. But the reason for having two components of internal validity is that we operate on them differently. The way that we approach controls for the two parts of internal validity are different. Can't back and forth between them. So, initial equivalence. Prior to manipulation of the causal variable, notice when it happens. Before manipulation of the causal variable, those moments, or days or weeks, but that time in between assignment and manipulation, that's when an initial equivalence either is or is not. Prior to manipulation of the independent variable, participants in the different conditions are the same on average on all measured subject variables. Initial equivalence, measured subject variables. After assignment, before manipulation starts, everybody in the two groups are equivalent on average. Only on average. It doesn't have to be a constant. You can have 80% experienced, 20% inexperienced, 80% experienced, 20% inexperienced. Balance. Balance is what you need. Equivalence on average. And then ongoing equivalence, which is more annoying than just having a longer definition. Ongoing equivalence is where the art and the craft of the researcher comes into play, where the resources that the researcher has come into play. Because during manipulation of the causal variable, wow, we got right after that. This is like just before that, boom, now we're into ongoing. As soon as you begin manipulating the independent variable, you are now talking about ongoing equivalence. Manipulation of the causal variable. Completion of the task. Remember external validity. Whenever you're collecting data, they're doing something. They're interacting with some stimuli, they're doing some task. During the completion of the task and the measurement of the effect variable, participants in the different conditions are the same on average on all manipulated procedural variables. If you want to, you can add the phrase, except the causal variable, because you are manipulating that. And people differ about how important it is to say that. I'm going to show it to you both ways at different times. We've just covered everything we need to. The conditions are equivalent before we manipulate them. And while we're manipulating them and they're doing their stuff to give us our data, the only difference between them is the causal variable. There was nothing operating before we manipulated. We manipulated one thing. We controlled everything else. At the end of the study, there's only one thing operating on the outcome variable, the causal variable. So if we find a statistical relationship between them, we already have temporal precedence because we manipulated before we measured. We have control over confounds because they were equivalent on average before we started and the whole way through except for the one causal variable. So the only thing left is do the statistical analysis and see if there's a difference between the groups on the outcome variable. Is there a relationship between group membership and the outcome variable? And if there is, hang a causal hypothesis on it. Let's play. Now remember the secret. Initial equivalence is about measured subject variables. Ongoing equivalence is about manipulated procedural variables. Let's talk about this notion of manipulated. Manipulated means it could have been manipulated if the researcher had paid attention and done their job. It doesn't mean they did manipulate it. They might have let it go. Or they might have screwed up. Okay, so manipulated really means manipulatable, but why carry those other letters around? I'm concerned that before the treatment began, there's a hint, before the treatment began, those in the drug treatment group were more depressed than those in the therapy treatment group. So before treatment began is a hint, and we're talking about the depression of the participants. Is that a property of the participants or the procedure?
Participants.
Participants. If it happened before manipulation and it's a property of the participants, are we talking about initial or ongoing equivalence?
Initial.
That's all there is to it. Slow down. Variable, constant, measured, manipulated. Now start thinking about the role of the variable in a process. Are you sure there's no problem allowing those in the drug treatment group to attend an extra 5 sessions? Those in the therapy treatment group didn't have the extra sessions. Is number of sessions a property of the participant or the procedure?
Procedure.
Initial or ongoing?
Ongoing.
That's all there is to it. The whole next layer of concern and fussing and attention is just an act of will. The vocabulary is not hard. The ideas aren't hard. Doing it every time is what's hard. To save time, there's always some excuse. To save time, only those who were familiar with computers were included in the computer training condition. Everybody else was put in a lecture condition. Is familiarity with computers part of the procedure or part of the participants?
Participants.
Initial or ongoing?
Initial.
How we doing? Measured or manipulated?
Measure.
Yeah, how are you going to get how familiar you are with a computer? Am I going to impose that on you or am I going to ask?
I'm going to ask.
Make sense? Because of the class schedule, those in the computer training condition only had 20 minutes to take the test, while those in the lecture condition had 30 minutes. Now you might say this poor soul, this poor researcher, good heart, had no control. Remember, when we say manipulated, we mean could have been manipulated properly. Is the time of the test a property of the participant or a property of the procedure?
Procedure.
So the researcher should have slapped it into account. So, is this an initial equivalence problem or an ongoing equivalence problem?
Ongoing.
The poor researcher might not have had any choice. Okay. Awesome. Sorry. Still can't have a causal interpretation. So let's look again at an old problem and just use the new language. This is the bilingual fourth graders getting 10 words practiced 5 times on the computer, and the bilingual second graders 10 words practiced 3 times on paper and pencil. We identified the grade of the school children as a confound. Is grade initial or ongoing equivalence? Wait. Is grade a property of the participant or the procedure?
Participant.
Would it have been measured or manipulated?
Measured.
With those things in mind, initial or ongoing equivalence?
Initial.
Perfect. Number of practices was a confound. Jump, initial or ongoing?
Ongoing.
How you doing? Shit's fun. Because when you say your study's awesome and somebody says, what did you like about it? You now have the language. Well, I like the way you measure things. I like the way you put your sample together. I think the task and the stimulus are awesome. I like the way you controlled this, that, and the other thing. Your initial equivalence, good. That language is the ticket to admission to conversations. When you say, I know my stuff, this is what know your stuff means. That you know the common sense language and you can use it to talk about things. So here's our folks that are part of a study comparing group and individual therapy. We identified number of sessions as a confound. Initial or ongoing equivalence? Is the number of sessions a property of the participant when they walk in the door or the procedure as it's carried out? Awesome. And there are some that are really hard and there's others that you'll get used to, and there will always be a couple that kind of trip you up and you have to stop and think about. I have a distinct advantage. I wrote the story problem. Prior therapy. Is thy confound, initial or ongoing?
Initial.
Because it's a property of the participant when they walked in the door. Initial equivalence is about things that happen outside the door. Procedural equivalence are things that happen once we begin to manipulate the causal variable. All right. 10 employed patients with no prior therapy completed a 24-session course of group therapy meeting each time at the University Psychiatric Clinic. 10 other unemployed patients, each of whom had previously received therapy for depression, completed a 10-session series of individual therapy meeting in a local church. After the respective therapies, the data seemed to support my hypothesis. Initial equivalence confounds. Difference between the participants in the two conditions. How are we doing? Okay. I heard all the right grumbles. Ongoing equivalence. Procedural things that were screwed up.
The location.
Location.
The amount of sex.
Yes. Therapies are IV.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Nope, backwards. I'm sorry. Oh, I screwed these up. I changed this to more. This should be type of therapy. Because the hypothesis, I changed this and forgot to change the answer. Apparently, I don't have an advantage. All right. We've had this conversation before. I wanted to get it on a slide. Traditionally, internal validity is all about causal interpretability. Why? Causal interpretability is about eliminating confounds, so that a statistical relationship between the variables can be properly interpreted as a causal relationship. Why? Because we know that compounds change results. If both the causal variable and the confound are operating, then the results will be changed from what they would be if there was no confound. This generalizes beyond causal hypothesis tests. Confounds change results. They change causally interpretable results, and they change associatively, predictively interpretable results. Confounds change results. If you were to do a large expensive meta-analysis looking at the replication crisis, and you were to separate the topics that you studied into those that are studied experimentally and those that are studied non-experimentally, guess which one shows poorer replication? The experimental or the non-experimental?
Non-experimental.
The non-experimental. Because I'm not running an experiment, I sometimes get a little sloppy with my confound control. I go get the data I can, and I'm depending on cool statistical analysis to give me the right answer. But confounds change results. They change results of causal hypothesis tests and associative hypothesis tests. The better the internal validity, the more accurate the results. Causal results and associative results. And let me, I don't know if I've said this before or not, but let me either start saying it or continue saying it. Our job is not P less than 0.05. We're going to learn about stats. We're going to learn all about P less than 0.05, this kind of error, that kind of error, this kind of right, that kind of right. Boom. Our job is not P less than 0.05. Now here comes the hard one. Our job is not to support our research hypotheses. Lord, it seems like it, because we work so hard on that literature review and that hypothesis set and the problems and the questions and the hypotheses, and we want to be right. Our real job is to get it right. Statistical conclusion validity, the really important one, which is dependent on internal validity. If we're going to get it right, we have to run a study where the things that are operating are the things that we think are operating. And that's just as true for an associative as for a causal hypothesis test. Yes?
So I just want to make sure that I grasp that well. So our job is to look at the research, understand what would be predicted, and then to build something that gets all of that right.
Yeah.
And then...
nope, you're doing fine.
Gets all of the research as it should.
Uh-huh.
Then our job is no longer to, like, our hypothesis is correct. Our job is just to measure, just to calculate, and then report what actually occurred.
In the framework of hypothesis testing.
Right.
Because what makes us happy is when we get both the hypothesis right and the data right. And the only real indication that we have both the hypothesis and the data right is if the data keep supporting the hypothesis across replications and programmatic research. We never have anybody who leans in and says, nicely done. Well played, young scientist. Good hypothesis, but you kind of screwed up on the data collection. We use consistency tied to a literature, empirical consistency tied to a literature as evidence that we're stacking it up the right way. Yep, it's that big of a pain in the butt. That's the part they didn't tell you in fourth grade scientific method. They made it sound like, run a study, learn truth. You should always run the cleanest and most controlled study possible, whether you're testing associative or causal hypotheses. It's a very high standard. It's very difficult to run a controlled study. You have to constantly worry about how we can clean up or control our research and data collection, so we can have the most valid results possible. Here's just a quick example. Those who got more practices were also more motivated and run during a different semester than those who got fewer practices. Those who got more practices were equally motivated and were run during the same semester as those who got fewer practices. I'd rather have the data from study two. There aren't two immediate problems with it. Yes? No. Sorry, above the hand, above the shoulder and moving. The fewer confounds you have, the more you learn from a statistical association. And again, internal validity is always important. Cleaner's better, tighter's better. The stronger the replication, the stronger the replicating of the methodology, the more likely you are to have a replication in your results. And this is one of my favorite essay questions. I will try to create a mechanism in the quiz that you almost certainly have to answer this. I will do two things. On the quiz, you'll have a choice between two essays. I give you two, you pick one. So I will pair this with the least attractive other question in the list. Count on it. Now, sometimes people see that as a grudge match. I'm cool with that too, because the other question is really important too. But this is about art and craft. Science is done through the excellence of the researchers. The ability to know the choices for the decisions they have to make, to know what are the expectancies of the research community, and to know when to break them and when to do novel things. When to be contrary and when to be novel. And when to follow along, because it's a pretty good idea. At no point is that more important than considering internal and external validity and how they relate to each other. The argument is every decision that you make has an impact on both internal and external validity. So what's the relationship between them? Historically, there have been two different ways of thinking about how internal and external validity relate to each other. The older one is the precursor model. It comes from a time when the majority of research was laboratory, experimental, causally manipulable results. Because the nature of the independent variables or causal variables we were studying was that they were manipulable. And if you can, you should. And that led to the precursor characterization. The precursor characterization is, if I don't have internal validity, if I don't have causal interpretability, I have nothing interesting to generalize. So this argument says the first thing you do is you control anything you have to so you have causal interpretability. And when you're sure you have causal interpretability between that causal and that effect variable, now let it off the chain a little and see if you can make it work in the real world. Okay? Depending upon the kind of research you plan to do, that may make great sense. Other times you look at it and go, I can't even imagine that. I study family type. I study sibling relationships as a causal variable. I'm probably not going to randomly assign and manipulate that ever. So, the trade-off model has become more popular as Our presumed causal variables have become more difficult to manipulate, but we still want to think of them as causal variables, so we want to clean things up as well as we can. And as a natural consequence of that, there's more of a mix of associative hypothesis tests and causal hypothesis tests in the same journals that used to be 90% true experiments in causal interpretability, and you never heard if the stuff worked in the real world. You had to go to other journals. The trade-off model says you're going to make a lot of decisions. Everyone has an impact on internal and or external validity, and sometimes you can't have both. Internal validity is all about control. External validity is all about naturalness, representativeness, as close as possible to where it's going to be used. And every decision you make has to be made thoughtfully, worrying about both internal and external validity. See, the precursor model is easy. Stack it up on internal validity and let somebody else worry about the external validity. The trade-off model says, man, there's a lot of ways to run this. What gives me the balance that I need? And because more of our business is done within the trade-off model, and there's more decisions, and there's more variability in their decisions, we're back to worrying about replication as needing to be a process before an evaluation. If you and I make 15 different decisions, and we make a different solution on every one of them, everyone's legitimate and reasonable, what are the chances we're going to find the same simple bivariate relationship between A and B? So, this semester we're going to worry about this. That's about what we're going to do, is we're going to worry. We're going to try and create clean comparisons and comparable comparisons. Next semester, we're going to start looking at statistical models that help us, where we can put into a statistical analysis more than variables A and B. And in addition to all of our hard work to control things procedurally, we can begin to look at how fancier statistical analyses can help clean up the stories we tell.